the vote. What you just heard was Spinning Compass. By Joshua Astor. This is Sun, and this is another edition of Drawn to Scale. We are joined in the studio today by Joshua Astor and Kristen Calabrese. Actually, they're not here. I was at their studio in Inglewood on Monday. We had a lovely, what was it, like 15-hour conversation with like several, I don't know, stretch breaks in between. And my recorder actually only recorded about 40 minutes of it. I think I got a call and the app decided to shut down the itself. So you're in for a treat, actually, due to my mistake. It's going to be a 2-for-1. You're not only going to get the 40-minute conversation at their studio, but the subsequent conversation over the phone the day after to make up the full hour today. But before we get to that, I want to do... Well, you know what? I usually do jokes, but I don't know. I don't really feel jokey today. I'm kind of in a... You know, the skies are cloud-covered. I'm feeling kind of in a somber mood. So... I guess we can continue what we did last time with Joshua Okon, which is playing a game. So on the ride here today, I thought up of another game, kind of related to the last one. It's two words that sound the same but have totally different meanings, and I picked enemy and enema. It just came up because last night I was watching Enemy. It's a 2013 film by Denis Villeneuve. And it stars Jake Gyllenhaal, one of my favorite actors, possibly of all time. He plays a guy who meets his doppelganger and becomes obsessed with his doppelganger. And one day he decides to meet him. And all this, I don't know, stuff ensues, and there's a surprise ending. So that's part one of this word game, enemy. The second word, I guess, is, what was it? Enema? You just switch the Y with the A and you get enema. Enemy, enema. So, how do I... You know what? I think, having used social media since the dawn of the internet, let's see, starting with Friendster? I feel like sharing stuff on the internet is like sticking an enema up someone else's ass and then having it sharted back into your face. Well, anyways, that's how it feels. All right, let's cut that out. We are going to skip right into the conversation held on Monday at Joshua Astor and Kristen Calabrese's studio. I think they need no introduction. And secondly, I'm too lazy to actually read one. So, here we go.
I mean, most of our conversation so far was pretty quality.
I know, we could have used all of it, yeah. Right? It's going to go downhill.
Now we're going to repeat ourselves, and it's just going to be, I don't know.
It's going to be kind of, stiff and rigid, self-conscious.
It's going to be the worst version of ourselves that we're now trying to make better by drinking.
I know.
But it's just going to make it even worse.
And it'll mess up the day, too, maybe, because we'll be really drunk.
I usually get kind of tired when I drink, so maybe this will be like a nap show.
Yeah, you know, I think I get tired when I drink wine more than I when I drink whiskey.
It's a heavier
whiskey.
Liquid. Yeah.
I like whiskey.
Beer makes me really,
honey, maybe I want one of my regular drinks, and you can have this one back.
All right, I'll make one.
Very strong. Just straight.
You have like a regular drink?
Yeah, I mix caffeine-free Diet Coke with a quarter shot of whiskey, which is very white trash, but
sure,
no calories.
Sounds
and it won't keep you up all night. So, and you won't really drink that much, just a little, and then I kind of feel like I'm getting a reward, you know.
Right.
Because
that's important.
I agree.
That's very important.
Well, I think painting's hard, you know.
Well, it's like a healthy routine that you work and then kind of sedate yourself.
Oh, no, I work while I'm getting
reward, okay.
You know? Like, yeah. I don't actually stop working kind of ever for the most part. I mean, I did, you know, just get home from Chicago, so.
Yeah.
The last two nights, I kind of just became a zombie at the end of the night and really couldn't do anything. But I work from the moment I get up till the moment I go to sleep, one way or another, always, kind of.
Yeah.
And he does too, pretty much, one thing or another. But, you know, like, we'll, like, you know, play TV shows while we're working. Like, I paint and then, like, I'll listen to, like, you know, serial crime shows or something.
Yeah, yeah. Many seasons. Right. You get, like, subliminal Agatha Christie through your painting. No?
Actually, not that show, but there are a lot
of shows. We can work on the Murder, She Wrote. Oh, no, that's Angela Lansbury.
Yeah, I mean, I think I did Sherlock once, but, I mean, that wasn't... What were the ones?
There Law and Order, there were, like, you know, 600 of those.
Yeah, and then we just did The Shield. That's an amazing...
That's a really
that's an
good
amazing
show.
Series.
That's really
The
good.
Shield.
Like, aren't you missing, like, half of the content? Through not...
Oh, no, if there's a lot of dialogue,
very
you don't
formula,
need to watch.
But it's very,
you kind of know who the characters
you know
are,
look
and
like,
then
you're like, oh, yeah.
You can
it's better to visualize the characters as, like, yourself.
Just need the talking.
No, you see what they look like, and then when you hear them, you know.
It's literally
you know.
Like,
yeah, you
right
get, like,
there.
That impression.
There, yeah, because...
You know, my easels, I'm usually painting in here. So we're
we
usually
came
painting
together in the same
room.
Yeah.
Because we like to be near each other.
Yeah, there's, like, better lighting in this area because there's a window right there.
Well,
right there.
There's good light there too, and we paint a lot at night. And I have these insane. Those are insane light. We should actually turn these old ones off.
Yeah.
So we have a couple different kinds of lights.
You have like the covers, and then you have like these enormous bulbs sticking out of them.
Yeah, like big spiral. Photo flood.
Yeah, they look like one of those
huge
flowers with like the
yeah, the
things sticking out.
The stamen,
the stamen is like grotesquely like oversized.
Yeah, but it's crazy. They're crazy light. It's this like
it's like having daylight,
bright white. Well, it's kind of intense. Actually, it's almost too light. But we paint a lot at night too. I mean, we're kind of a little more night people.
Night owl.
ish. Yeah. Ish. Kind of big
night
time.
Cat?
Night cat.
I've never actually seen cats sleeping. They sleep
all the time.
Yeah, right? Yeah. That's like what
they sleep 80% of the day. Cats do.
Okay.
That's all they do.
What kind of cats am I? Like,
you had kittens. You had kittens around, that's right? Yeah, those are monsters. Awake. They're never sleeping. Yeah, they're always rolling around.
Wait, do you guys have like kittens in here?
We don't.
Any other pets?
Our landlord's not cool with pets. Which is, you know, I mean, we would have a cat otherwise.
Because I know, you know,
it's sad.
It's like painters and pets. They kind of go well together.
I love cats.
Go very well together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. We both love cats.
Yeah. Someday we'll
cats
are
good. Maybe we'll get a cat one day.
Yeah. What about like a leopard or something?
Leopard? Well, anything you know, that could kill spiders
big,
and stuff, you know.
There are those pictures on the internet of people hugging like a full-length cat.
Right.
Like a lynx or whatever.
Right.
Oh, lynx.
I mean,
I'm talking about like
I would love to have something like that.
A jaguar.
Something
like
nice.
H&M
just like very, prowling around.
Very soft. They're pretty dangerous though, but yeah, I mean, maybe. They are really pretty.
Your paint would just be, you know, torn off the walls.
Well, I'm worried about your face being torn off your head.
I mean, how many sprays of water before it learns that it can't? Now.
That thing is the boss.
I guess you would be more tastier than a mouthful of oil.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I learned fast.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that wasn't good.
Oh, God. So, should we, like, talk about the work again?
Whatever
you like. We spent like the last hour or so.
Yeah, we did. Didn't you have questions for
us? Yeah, you're right.
Let's start with the questions.
Yeah, duh, I forgot.
Maybe they're difficult and then they'll be intense.
Well, I kind of programmed it so that it would be really simple.
Like
simple questions. Complicated answers.
You never know what's
going to
be.
And you are responsible for making it very, like, I don't know, complex.
Okay.
You know? Give. Okay. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I try to be clear, you know.
Yeah. Who are some of your favorite painters?
Just in general, over the world?
Yeah, I'm going to start with, like, maybe questions that both
That's
of you...
That's hard.
Some of you, like, both of you can... Yeah.
Well,
but
I mean,
you can interject.
Yeah.
Later on, when I ask, like,
well, it shifts because you know, like anything, you know, you'll see work. From the beginning, my grandfather was a painter. He taught painting in Brooklyn at Erasmus High School, and early on, we would go to museums, and so he was born in like 1901 and died in 1999. So he had like the full century there. And his work kind of traversed that, and that it shifted from this, he had a pretty tight observational painting quality. And then, you know, Picasso and Braque really shifted an influence. So that like moment of cubism, which kind of in my early points, we went to the museums, were big. So Braque was just one of those things where it was, there was something kind of muted and somber in the tone of the palette, which, you know, growing up on the East Coast, you know, obviously Braque was in Paris and whatnot, but like there was something there that kind of really I latched onto. I also like things that really showed their discovery of the making of the painting. So, you know, anything from like a Van Gogh where the marks broke down in some way. So, but then, you know, as I got really into abstraction, it tended to be, you know, the wide berth of abstraction, you know.
Yeah.
So I'd love like an Agnes Martin to a Lee Mulliken, you know. So you're always kind of...
Noskowski or...
Thomas Noskowski. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
He works on a small scale, too.
Right, yeah. Small scale abstraction was definitely, you know, something where you're achieving a feat or an exploration within, you know, some very limited parameters.
But you're really broad who you're into. I mean, like Kirchner, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So things that shifted from didn't necessarily have to be representational or non-objective at the same time. You know, it could be really... I liked that kind of ambiguity, too. You know, why does, you know, a grid is a form of lines, is a drawing, is something that is a schematic, and then a drawing is a schematic that is just like a bent grid, you know?
Yeah.
So it kind of like, all those things kind of help influence and like are always feeding my own exploration.
Yeah.
I think I tend to sort of I like a lot of different kinds of painting, but sometimes I like abstraction more than realism, even though I'm a realist painter. A realist painting has to jump a lot of hoops or a lot of hurdles for me to not think it's bad. But I was recently at the School of the Art Institute, Artist in Residence, in an advanced painting class, so working with students and making my own work. But I spent a lot of the time at the museum, and the class was team taught with one of the other faculty was Richard Hull, and Terry Myers described him as the youngest member of the Harry Hu School. So,
Houdini?
Harry Hu, the painting school, the Harry Hu School.
Yeah,
you know,
Chicago.
Like Jim Nutt and, yeah. Kind of funky, sort of cartoony, amazing. He's an amazing artist. He's 14 years older than me or something. So, whatever. But he's amazing. And he had that kind of sage-like painter vibe, the kind of guy who just makes you want to do better,
overhanging cerebrality.
He was just actually very, super cool, just a cool guy,
Right. So, he could probably, put out a cigarette on your arm and you would be like, oh man, that's cool.
Yeah, exactly. Like that kind of cool. Really cool.
You're burned, man.
I mean, Chicago's really interesting because there are a lot of older painters in a way that I think that L.A. there aren't that many. I mean, L.A. almost doesn't have a deep history or tradition of painting, and even San Francisco has more of that, and Chicago has more of that, and New York certainly has more of that, and when I was at UCLA, I certainly, studied with, Larry Pittman and Roger Herman.
Yeah.
And
but we're,
and,
like, young.
Yeah, we're the, I like the generation, the real Ab X painters, those old guys that were so cool. I mean, so there's just not a lot of them. So not that Richard Hull is that old, but anyway, so we actually talked. Going back to the favorite paintings, that changes for me at different times, a lot. But my most recent favorite right now is de Kooning, I think, because I'm aware of all those ideas of him, being a misogynistic painter, slashing and chopping up women's bodies, and I don't know if that's really misogynistic. I mean, I think it's just something to work with. It's like an abstraction.
How do you feel about women painters who paint in a de Kooning manner? I'm thinking Cecily Brown.
I love her more early work.
Yeah.
I like her giant figures of, men with just erect penises. And I mean, what I really liked about Cecily Brown's paintings is the way she was able to situate the figure in a way in space, almost so it looked like the figure was in front of the canvas. They came into the room just because of the way they were cropped. So she was pretty amazing. But I don't think she really paints like de Kooning. I mean, de Kooning was really an abstract artist. I mean, I guess she's sort of chopping things up now more. I'm not so interested in her more recent work. But I don't know. I mean, maybe I would be. Maybe I just don't understand it. I mean, painting has humbled me a million times, and I know that I actually just don't understand a lot of things sometimes. And then after a while, if I understand it, I'm blown away. But there's this one de Kooning painting at SAIC, the museum, and if you're teaching there, you can stand with students and basically critique a Sargent painting. So it's Bruegel and de Kooning, those are my favorite painters right now.
Yeah. Right, and that the Bruegel painting.
I couldn't find the Bruegel that was there. It was on loan, actually. They didn't have it, but But the de Kooning is the what it was like. It's kind of yellowish and it's really abstract. There's no figures in it and it's pretty much square.
Were you saying there was something in there in the corner that you pointed out?
Oh, there's a door. There's a little drawing of a door in the bottom of it. And supposedly there's a little drawing of a door in all of his paintings. So they open up and become these weird narratives. But the other thing that I really liked is, you know, I'm a representational painter. I like to play with perspective. And I like to paint things in a way where you can't really tell what you're looking at sometimes, although I'm also very direct, you know. But I do like a lot of fake abstract paintings that I've really been sort of, you know, tilting the way that the space is, you know, perceived. But that de Kooning painting, up by the top of it, it was like the lines got closer together in a way that it looked like landscape going back in the horizon, so they were closer together. And then in the middle, it was kind of regular space. And then in the bottom, the lines just fell off the canvas, just straight down. And, you know, because of looking at that with Richard Hull and, like, all of the students from the class who are amazing, amazing students there.
All 1,200 of them.
Yeah. There were only 20 in the class, though.
Yeah, this is like some sort of...
20 in the class, but there's 1,200 painters at SAIC, actually, which is amazing. Yeah. Painting is just so alive and well in Chicago.
Yeah, who would have thunk it?
You have to go there to realize that. I mean, you know, or I did anyways, you know. I go there every, almost every year and do something there.
Yeah, it's like this sort of... pilgrimage to Anish Kapoor's Bean.
Oh yeah, it's right straight from the Bean.
Shiny Bean.
Yeah,
but it's really strange. I mean, I feel like it's almost like I get to be like an art student again for like a few weeks.
Wow, you know? Is that like utopic?
Yeah, it's wonderful.
You know?
And I forget all the stress because I can't, you know, because I'm working on work and then I'm talking to students and I'm there like 24/7 in the studios and I like the I like undergrad energy anywhere that's a good school. Like, undergrad art school energy is, like, the best.
Yeah.
That's, like, everything. And nobody's... It's not, like, that career competition thing hasn't quite set in like it does at grad school.
It's
and
like
it just,
you're kind of, like, roiling up all this... All this nostalgia. I have, like, a cough drop in my mouth, so I can't talk. Roiling up all this, like, nostalgia.
Well, I feel like I'm dipping back into the well. Dipping back into the source where I first found,
That,
like,
innocence.
Oh, it's great.
Well, watching somebody, you know, discover something for the first time and kind of their new perspective on something. Well, you may have your old thoughts. But,
well,
like,
I throw everything off a cliff and I start over again, like, all the time. I mean, I try to, like, reset. I mean, that's where I try to be is what the way I was thinking in undergrad. I try to be there all the time.
Yeah. Because you get kind of, like, stayed or, like, very, like, entrenched.
I don't want to know what I'm doing.
Yeah, you don't want to be entrenched in this, like, system.
I want magic.
And that is only linked to youth.
Right. Well, it's not linked to magic on the spot.
You get better at magic. Yeah. The older you get, the more you know, the more you can do, you know?
Yeah.
The more you can transform yourself into this.
Well, I think actually.
Butterfly.
Well, no, I think actually, like, the longer you do things, the more it actually shapes, like, what you look like and all that kind of stuff, you know? I mean, I don't have the permanent hunch yet, but I will.
What do you think about, like, defining a particular style? Because you said that you were into abstraction, but you paint.
Well, no, I maybe will like maybe the work that I gravitate towards that I like more will be abstract work of other people's.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Cecily Brown is an amazing artist. So, you know, her figuration, I mean, is amazing. And early Hockney, amazing, you know. And that's, I mean, there's abstract elements to it. They're definitely drawing. Yeah. Drawing and brushwork is a big deal. But, you know, I render things like, I mean, there's range. But, I mean, I get rid of even any kind of bump on the surface or, you know, no brush marks. And, you know, so...
Well, I feel like you're kind of blowing the field wide open. Because
that sounds good.
Because there's rules to follow.
Uh-huh.
In painting, that's how you kind of Begin. Learn all the rules and then break them.
Oh.
Right?
Well, I didn't learn like that.
You also might actually just eventually follow what you're most comfortable with, what you're uncomfortable with, what the other things that are the content of the work, which aren't necessarily the ways of making the work. So for me, I mean, I got to the point where it's like, well, if I'm going to make a mark, I'd want the mark to have an identity in some way or have a reason to exist. So it had to come from something, you know. I mean, I could do hundreds of drawings just kind of, you know, like out of my head. And they're not out of my head, but I really liked using something in the real world, something three-dimensional, to then create, you know, paintings that were essentially, you know, two-dimensional, you know, but to have the illusion of deeper space. Because the painting, I want the paintings to draw you in, and then I also want them to break down or to add up in this other way that is both painted and drawn. So the rules, which can be rule-based to each individual painting, may shift to the next one, you know. So I may work on a series, but within a whole series, there are different focuses, you know, on each one, you know.
Yeah. You're kind of like a random, but it's controlled.
Random control. Sounds like, yeah. Sounds like Big Brother or something like that. Yeah, yeah.
Big
random
brother?
Control.
Right.
Oh, no, with parameters. Like, there's parameters, and then there's things that can happen within those parameters. Mm-hmm. And then there's other things that you just can't do or just can't deal with. I mean, I know that, Josh, you said that a lot of the way you make marks was just because you were trying to figure out how to get from one side of the canvas to another. Yeah. You know, which just reminded me of being a little kid and like playing a game where you're on the couch, but you want to get on the chair, but you're not allowed to touch the floor, and so you kind of crawl.
Oh my God! I used to do that all the time. I saw
it's like a disorder, but I mean, it's also art rule.
You know? It's a kid thing. It's like the way we naturally think.
Totally.
And what was it you saw?
Well, I would walk on the floor in a way that kind of. Like, I saw geometry on the floor.
Right.
And I would walk with a certain number of steps where, you know, edges of walls either intersected or kind of like, you know, like walls that, like, if you were to kind of extend a wall, it would form a line.
Whoa. Yeah.
Right.
And then you could only, like, you like not.
You have
touch.
To jump over.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. Wow. Yeah, I did stuff like that, too. It's almost like a Sudoku.
Sudoku. Kind of. Oh, my God. That shit is like...
It's so ridiculous.
Yay, airplane Sudoku.
I was actually in on a bus ride in New Jersey when somebody introduced me to Sudoku.
Oh, right. Well, that'll kill your trip to New Jersey.
And that just messed me up for the rest of my life.
Yeah, right.
It's those, like, puzzles, you know, that kind of keep you self-entertained.
Well, I think these floor games are really... sort of like come into play in painting.
Well, totally. And I did paintings on the floor knowing that they would eventually be painted over. When I first moved to LA, I was, you know, parking lots and palm trees. So, you know, parking lots were like the big, you know, thing that I would, you know, those were line drawings on, you know, and there was contrast. So, you know, I did sumi ink drawings on the ground of my studio. And they were like, you know, small enough for, you know, little matchbox cars, that kind of quality small. So you would still have this feeling of distance, like if you were human scale and this thing was small. Right. But it was a way to do like a black drawing on a floor, you know.
But a physicality, kind of like it's a matchbox car.
Right,
you know,
could
fit there.
Right. But it was very much like I had broken down, like the spot was, you know, one brushstroke length this way, then leave a space. You know, so it was the way to kind of... to start, you know, thinking about the parameters of the space, the studio space, you know, the edges of things, and so how to fill that up and how to think about my own distance, my own working process, too. I knew when this was done, when the thing was filled up, so there was a way to kind of interact and also have the endpoint, you know.
And also be like some sort of Godzilla figure, kind of running rampant.
Must conquer.
Just like breathing fire onto all these.
Wow.
Like,
that's very
marks.
Jungian. Yeah. Jungian, like Carl Jung.
Oh, Jungian, I want to kind of...
He's really, he's all about like the children feeling like they're destroying things just by doing a drawing. Like, that childhood urge is very, very destructive. And like, you know, maybe they feel bad, like they hurt their parents by getting angry. And, like, there is this kind of, like, natural, magical thinking when you're a child that's sort of, you know, like, feelings feel very powerful. Mm. They kind of still do, but...
Yeah, but they're more, like, I don't know, subtle.
We know that actually when I'm like, oh, I wish that would blow up, we know that it doesn't, you know?
Right.
Well, and when you see a painting and it just splits you apart because it's just so... something in it just emotionally or beyond itself or some combination of, you know, of the palette or wherever the scale of it is just, you know... is overwhelming, you know, and
well, that's what we
that's
want.
When you that's yeah, and yeah. That's when you.
I'm thinking of like, okay, so you've got a guy in like the early 1800s, let's say, like David Caspar Friedrich.
Okay,
he wants to like blow the fuck out of your mind. How is he going to do it through painting? Because that's like the only medium that's available. You know, to do such a thing, blowing like people's
minds.
Well, I think
beautiful.
Painting and does, so, like, does it better so he decides, than a lot of things.
Yeah, so he decides to do like this painting of a guy like on top of a, I don't know, summit.
Is that what he was trying to do?
I don't know. Maybe. I think he was just like a huge loner who did landscapes all the time.
They're romantic. Are they transcendental? Transcendental romantic paintings about... are they man with nature? Like, yeah. Sometimes I always think of them as, like... I don't know, like courtly love or something. I mean, I feel like, you know, like not Courtney love, courtly love.
Courtney
you know,
love. Like, right. Chivalry.
Like, almost like a, you know, a noble young man who's like offering himself, like, you know, some kind of, they go into that kind of fantasy for me. But, I don't know.
I almost feel like you can still achieve that. But you have to kind of turn.
But I think we can achieve it a lot more now. Josh and I were just talking. Actually, we were just actually talking last night, and we were thinking that actually art is brand new.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Post photography, like since photography has happened, and well, just because of looking at the museums and going through. Well, I mean, you know, Caravaggio, or just like a lot of. Caravaggio is incredible. He might be one of the exceptions, but a lot of religious painting and a lot of painting of portraits, and you know, and then I you know, there's a little bit of that kind of like Dutch humorous paintings, but for the most part, there's a lot of just pretty dull paintings of portraits and religious, and they're interesting in themselves. But I thought like how limiting that would be to be an artist then, and I think that the conception of what art was pretty narrow. I mean, it was also like satire and religious illustration and, you know, historical, I know, the whole nine yards. And now, like, I don't know when it started, but it's just become so interesting. I mean, I think we've created something that doesn't necessarily have any of that baggage. And painting now is new. Everything is new. And we're making it right now. It's all contemporary.
Yeah.
When did it start?
Oh, you know.
Did it start with like...
After the 80s, I guess.
July 18.
I mean, it started 19, earlier than that.
1996?
No, I mean, did it start with Duchamp, you know? Did it start with...
Right, like, it's still really new, you know? I mean, it's still kind of on the cusp.
A couple hundred years, brand new. Like, we make art, and art is art is like a force in the middle of the room, you know. Art is something else than it was before. And, you know, and I think painting is uniquely suited to be able to do it. I mean, there's problems with painting. It's that they're only in one place. I mean, there's pictures of paintings. You can see them all over. That's better than nothing. And painters are, you know, primarily image makers. And so we're really good at making images. And so we're uniquely qualified to make JPEGs, you know. But, but you know, and then there's the extra thing. There's like a real object somewhere. And then they always look different than they look on the internet, you know.
Well, I mean, the internet is a way to distribute to the masses really quickly. And so
and
maybe,
to other artists.
Maybe
this thing that you're talking about has its beginnings in like mass production. You know, being able to kind of send.
Nope.
No?
Nope.
Oh, you mean the internet is invested in well, mass production?
I mean, first came print.
Well, the internet.
And then came television. And
sure,
then the internet.
Yeah.
So you can get to see something really quickly.
Gutenberg, movable type, yeah. You know, lithography, whatever. But no, I'm actually talking about, you know, I think the idea of what art is changed. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I know it was really changed with abstract expressionism. I think they really developed something really different. That was sort of released from, maybe it still had some of the same religious qualities, but it was released from religion.
Yeah, it's like Rothko is like a really secular type of, I don't know.
Secular.
I mean, he even has like his own church. Yeah, it's like a church of secularism.
Right, and, Agnes Mark.
The glowing thing at the end of the hall.
Picasso, isn't that a completely different thing, you know, and Brock then...
Maybe it's like the introduction of everyday, because if you look at somebody like Cezanne, uh-huh. Yeah, he kind of like shifted how you perceive what painting was, but he was just painting like trees and apples
right.
and stuff.
But there were a lot of Dutch still life painters who were doing that too, and trompe l'oeil painters in the 1500s.
Hard to put the clamp down on like
where art doesn't. Oh, and then that had to. Those Dutch still life paintings, they were describing money, and then they were worth as much as the painting of the objects were, and that's why merchants were buying them, you know, to say they had this much money in this painting. So that's really interesting. Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe it's the appreciation of the value of painting that has contributed to it.
Oh, wow.
You know, like before auctions existed, paintings were just... Is that, you know, they had like spiritual value.
Appreciation has a funny...
I think that they still do. And then I think that those are...
Because like what contributes
things
to like the aura of like a $200 million painting?
Well, I mean, you know, what was Velázquez's paintings going for? I mean, he was like selling them to Spain, you know, the king,
he was a
court painter. It's like, I mean, and was it like $2 million paintings? Kind of probably. I mean, you know, it still was a pretty rarefied, you know, the kind of people who were really painting were kind of rich, you know. I mean, it's always been sort of... I mean, I think maybe more people who aren't rich can paint now. But, you know, because we don't have to labor as much, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we don't have so many people dying all around us from plague or whatever. But,
maybe they're dying in some other sense.
Yeah. Dying on the inside.
Yeah. Yeah, so, banality. I mean, you know, I guess painting and all of art, there's always been maybe some range of what it could perform for a lot of time. I mean, William Blake.
But it's also stubbornly always going to be, you know, well, it's a painting, so you'll see it, and then you'll look away, and you'll not see it. You won't hear it. You won't smell it. You know what I mean? Well, I mean, I think that's one of the...
And then you could send it somewhere, and then it could be there, the same as it is. It's like easier than installation. You don't have to set it up again. You just have to turn on the lights.
Well, and it's like, when somebody is painting, are they like, I'm painting ready to communicate to the masses, or I'm painting ready to, because I'm having this, you know, I'm having a, you know, a moment with the object that I'm making, or, I mean, I'm just talking about it from the different perspectives of making
the
thing.
It's a really personal
There's consequences
experience.
Of, obviously, when people are looking at them, and what they're going to either think of, or how someone else is going to attribute why you did something, or how, or, you know, but that's kind of the endless conversation, thankfully. You know, it can offer that up, and people can have opinions about it forever, you know, even the thing that is, you know, from the 1600s to yesterday.
Yeah.
All right, what's the next question?
Yeah. Next question? Oh, my God.
I don't know if I answered the last one.
That was like the first question.
Oh.
Didn't we have two questions?
That was like the first two questions.
What was the second question?
I don't know. I think it was something about de Kooning?
Yeah, yeah.
But that was like a side question.
That was the first question. Yeah. Who's your favorite painter?
Yeah, that was like that's the very first question.
And but we're you like, did two like, questions. Almost... Wasn't there a second question? Mm-hmm.
No.
Oh, yeah. It was
we just kind of went off. Josh?
There was one more.
Yeah. What was the second question?
Something about the... you know, there's not enough ice in my drink or something like that.
Yeah, I need a refill.
Dude, let me get some.
Oh, okay.
And some more ice.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can edit a little.
Oh, no, you were talking about style.
I was just teaching.
About...
Oh, yeah, you were talking about the Chicago.
Style. You said, why do you think it is, you know, you asked, like, how do you... You asked about style.
Yeah.
Oh, and style.
I didn't write down that question.
Well, it came it was just like, you.
Yeah, just because of the
Ideas are in flux about that, too, actually.
What are you going
to put ice in it?
Oh, okay. Is that a cup?
That's a handmade object.
It's a cup.
It's like a conch shell.
It's a I have to rinse it out. But yeah, it's beautiful though.
It has like
thanks. I like it. My mom gave it to me for like Christmas. Her neighbor made it, something like that.
I would probably eat cereal out of that.
That's a good idea.
Or wear it as
like it would be a good cereal bowl.
If it was lighter, I'd wear it as a hat.
Well, you know, not comfortable actually.
Oh,
yeah,
because
it'd be a little rounder.
Ceramics are kind of not good for hats.
Yeah. Like saws and painting are fine, and then everything else is like, you know, oh no, I'm tripping
again.
Yeah,
I mean, as far as style, I guess, you know, you could talk about what was the, you know, I don't know, do we really want to talk about this? That show in New York, you know, the Laura Hopman essay for the Forever, what was it? Mm-hmm. Was it Forever Now, the show? What was it called in New York?
Yeah.
Big painting show, first painting survey at MoMA in like... How many years? Like 30 years it's been since the last one?
We didn't see it. So.
A lot of my friends were in it. I know, but there's been a lot of conversation about the essay. And I didn't buy any of it. At first, Laura Hopman said something like, because of computers, we can look at all different styles together. And and we can just pick a style for whatever project we're going to do with whatever paintings we're going to do. And... You know, I know a lot of the artists in the show, and I kind of thought that was bullshit, you know? Like, I was like...
Right. I mean, those artists are making those paintings.
But
they're not doing...
I'm actually have been moving towards agreeing with the essay. Because, you know, take Mary Weatherford, for example. You know, her painting she's doing, I mean... I had some conversations in Chicago about them because I sort of read them just as they're Abex paintings in my mind, you know. But then before that, she was painting actually vines and she was painting walls. And so I was thinking, you know, I know that, you know, she's been painting for a long time and studying painting for a long time. And you know, and I know that I think she... you know, probably does decide on a style to use for a particular project self-consciously, and it doesn't really mean it's insincere. It just means that I'm going to use this style for this content. Yeah. And I do that too, but I sort of, when I think about like the idea of using style and on a project, I sort of start, you know, thinking it's insincere in some way, but I sort of actually kind of resolve myself to thinking it wasn't. And I think the only way I could sort of understand it is, I think like a lot of, you know, a lot of painters who are alive now, who are a little middle-aged or older, are, and maybe even younger, were sort of taught in kind of an Abex tradition of how to, you know, balance composition, you know, push-pull, blah, 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 whatever. And, I mean, I know, you know, Mary had some... training like that, you know, I had training like that, Josh had training like that, I mean, we all went to different schools, I mean, you could, you know, so I think most of us could actually be like, I'm going to make an Abex painting right now, so I did a monoprint, and I was like, oh, I think mm-hmm. I'll try to do an Abex monoprint, you know.
Well, I think, you know.
And I did, and then, but it didn't mean that I didn't love the piece, and it hadn't set up problematic parameters, and... You know, and I think actually, you know, what I learned in school about, you know, the picture plane and balancing it and are what I react with and against in every painting, amongst other stuff. I don't think that a painting should be only one thing. And, you know, Peter Halley, I think he solidly is always doing two things at least.
Yeah.
In every painting.
I'm looking at the wall behind you.
Yeah.
Of your whole paintings.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you have a whole, but then you have this kind of construct where it's compositionally balanced. Where there's like a certain...
There's a preset. There's like, yeah, they're all fitting into, yeah, their spots. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think...
Well, and there's a dot on each square, basically.
There's a dot.
It's kind of like a solid width, right? Only, yeah, a lot of sticks.
Yeah, I see a...
I don't think everyone has a stick.
I see a hole in a stick.
There's a lot of sticks. That's kind of...
But when you burrow into a way of working, you know, be it monoprinting or painting outside, and specific, you know, when there's specificity, when they're saying, like, I'm going to, you know, there would be 121 paintings of holes. There are going to be, you know, 100 paintings using objects to create, you know, schematics to then color in some way. You know, there's kind of a loose but concentrated focus, so that it allows for a lot for a lot of things to take place,
solid
and discovery
wit.
To take place too. You know,
yeah, Solowit creates
is an influence.
These,
squares
rule.
Where
yeah.
you do these rules in
yeah,
a different
yeah.
space.
So let me ask you this.
But everything that isn't in the rules, you can change.
Yeah.
Do you think that the content of painting is just experimentation? Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. I know what you mean.
I don't.
What is it then?
Well, how would it... I mean, if I'm experimenting, I'm not making a good painting.
That's not true. I think you're like...
Jump to next day.
Virtual... We're like living in a virtual Earth, but we're actually, you know, like Matrix-style pods on another planet.
Maybe. I don't know. That sounds kind of harsh, you know? I think that's why I have to make things, actually, because that kind of grounds and also, you know, also expands. So that's, you know, making images and paintings kind of always, you know, kind of can connect you and allow you to jump off from where you're kind of usually are. So yeah, I don't know. Well, it's funny because we were kind of talking about, you had brought up like Caspar David Friedrich during the group conversation. And we sort of talked about, I thought about, you know, a little bit just tying into what I'm kind of painting now. And I mean, the idea of the sublime that you brought up, and really when I make a painting, I've been thinking about kind of an all-over pattern, and sometimes there are these moments with them where they break, where the pattern breaks, and then there's kind of this, you know, a mutation takes place, or kind of a disruption, but I really try and weave the disruption in, I guess. And lately, I've been using, like, little figurines, actually, to,
I mean,
to navigate
otherwise,
the space. Yeah.
Otherwise, you'd be just painting like checkerboard, or.
Well, it's funny. For a while, for a couple of years, I was painting checkerboard type work in the sense that the brushstroke was the square, was the mark, was the pixel, and those kind of things added up. And you know, that was, you know, thousands and thousands of hours of you know, keeping filling time, filling space. You know, and as a way to sort of allow the image to take place gradually, you know, really filling up one edge to the next. And so there was a real limit. Like, I was like, all right, I'll only use this, you know, quarter inch square or something like that. And so that the images were, like, always related, but they, in at least how they were made or processed, but... you know, the image itself could be radically different, just because.
Yeah, it's like when you do play checkers or chess, there's an infinite variation as far as how the game is played, but you're always playing on the same board.
Right, right. Well, it's funny now, I'm probably more interested in chess because, you know, rather than things just being a circle, you know, the little figures, the moments have, you know, they have like little identities and things. So now when I'm, because when I grab a stick from the woods and I notice some kind of rhythm in the pattern, the way the stick grows in some way, or the segments are attached to each other, and then those become, you know, kind of the new rule or the new mark making possibility for the painting.
New move, you know. You're making a new move.
It's a new move, yeah. You know, I mean, to me, I got to a point where a line could be a million different things, you know. You know, and that is, I mean, those kind of formal essentials.
A little bit of the everyday in his work.
In his work, yeah, and in my work, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's like the kind of connection I see.
Yeah, well, I think our work is pretty, I mean, we think about a lot of the same things, so, and then we make things that look really different, and that are different.
No, they're completely different.
Yeah, well, they're both paintings, so they're similar in some ways, but, I guess for me, I'm very interested in reality, just the real world and real interactions between people. Just because I think it's more interesting than anything that anyone could make up.
Yeah. And, when you say reality, I just want to see if I can clarify what you mean by that. Is that like a possible, like each person has a version of reality and you're trying to...
You mean point of view.
Right.
Well, yeah, I know. But, you know, me painting everyday objects or, you know, the ground that's here or, you know, the light that's in the room,
something that you observe directly.
Yeah, real stuff.
Okay.
But then there's also, you know, everybody is very different and people see things really differently, but there's also a lot of commonality between just the way people react emotionally and reasons why and the way that, you know, psychologically humans operate, you know, I mean, we are, you know, more similar, just like Josh and I, we're both painters. So our work is more similar than different. You and I, we're both humans. So we're more similar than different, you know,
I guess
I'm all of us.
Half.
I mean, cause I'm not a tree. I mean, you and I are more alike than you are like a tree.
Yeah. We have commonalities that, allow us to do what we're doing right now, which is communicate in English.
Right. But, you know, I mean, we might not understand each other at all.
Right. Things could just
there's really no way to tell, for sure.
Yeah, I wish there was, like, some sort of mark, like, sound, like,
ding,
whenever an understanding has been achieved.
You yeah, maybe don't talking. Wish for that too much. There might be something like that someday. Very soon, even. Ding.
Or like a you know?
Oh, my God.
Which would you think would sound off more on a day-to-day basis?
Which would I think what?
Sound off. Like, if that was an actual
I think I
thing.
Would really totally avoid people altogether if that was happening. That seems horrible.
No, but at least it's like some sort of indication.
Alrighty then. I'm sorry I had to cut off the ending to our conversation, our phone conversation with Josh and Kristen. But I want to thank them for being such lovely guests, very accommodating, very generous, and I had a all-around fun time. And we'll probably, you know, at least 15 miles apart from each other, or at most, for the next few months or years, because this is kind of loud, because we live in Los Angeles. All right, folks, the next show, I believe, is going to be August 13th. Let me check my calendar really quick. No, that's Oscar and Lucinda off of a PDF. Fucking search. Okay. Anyways, August, we're going to have Jai Tip and Jam Jai of Jai and Jai. They're a local gallery here in Chinatown. Beautiful, smart ladies who know what they're doing. And my co-host will be Christine Wang. Peace out. Bye.